morning. I chair plenty of meetings, Director Hudson. It is going to be just fine today. Well, good morning and welcome to the Budget and Finance Committee. At this time, would you please take the roll call?
On the roll for the Budget and Finance Committee meeting of March 22nd, 2019, Director Abe-Koga, Director Canepa, Director Chavez.
Here.
Remote. Director Hudson.
Here.
Director Mandelman, Director Mitchoff, Director Ross, Director Sinks, Director Wagon Connect.
Here.
Committee Vice Chair Bowders.
Here.
Chair Groom. We do have a quorum.
Just to be clear, 5 out of 11 is a quorum?
Yep.
Okay, great. Please join me for the Pledge of Allegiance. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic,
one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
We'll do it with Cindy and Echo. Awesome. Thank you so much. At this time, public comment for non-agenda items. Any members of the public who wish to speak will have 2 minutes to do so. Seeing none, we'll move to approval of the minutes from February 27th, 2019. There's a motion by Director Wagon Connect, a second by Director Hudson. All in favor, please say aye. Aye. All opposed, all abstaining, passes unanimously by members present. Discussion for the proposed budget, fiscal year ending 2020. Jeff.
Thank you, Chair Bowders, members of the committee. Today I'm going to talk about the proposed budget for fiscal year ending 2020. This is the first of two presentations to this committee, and then there are two presentations to the full board after that. And I'll talk about that schedule here at the end. We're also today going to hear about the fees, of course, and that relates to the budget as well. So, I'm going to start with context, just talk about the current year. Fortunately, that's not especially interesting. It's one slide. We're doing fine as expected. I'll then provide a little more context with financial history, some charts that you've all seen a few times that show how various of our measurements performed over the years. And then, given that context, we'll jump into the budget proposal that we're bringing forward here for 2020. In the current fiscal year, 2019, that we're in, it's a $99 million budget that includes $4 million that we pulled out of reserves for our TIO loan program. And as of today, our permit fees are on target, given that there was a change in the expiration date for 1215. Our property tax is on target. Our expenditures are on target. So we have no indications at this time of any significant deviations from the 2019 budget. So let's turn to a broader perspective, looking back over the years. Context is important. And of course, looking back, it's hard not to focus particularly on the downturn that we experienced a few years back. During that time, as we've discussed quite a bit, we used several methods to deal with the challenges. We did use reserves from the general fund in a controlled way over many years. We let our vacancies increase just through attrition. We did put off some expenditures. We put off capital investment, as I always like to point out, at that old building. It was obvious. And the cost recovery policy was initiated, which you'll hear discussed today. Very important in that it provides guidance to staff and to the regulated community about what to expect relative to our fees as the years go by. And the regulated community certainly has told us they appreciate the ability to plan. And in addition, throughout the downturn, though we did continue funding our retirement liabilities, which was very fortunate as it meant we were putting money into the bank at the bottom of the market, which are into the stock market at the bottom of the market. That's a good thing to do. So let me turn here to some historical charts. This chart, of course, is important, how our reserves did over the years. And Chair Bowders has brought forward a very good idea, which we're going to execute, which is to model how we would go through a downturn now, what actions we would take, and what we think that might look like. So we're in the process of looking back at how those numbers played out 10 years ago, and we'll be helping ourselves all look forward by bringing forward a model of how we would do that in the future. We've already started working on that. But as you can see, we had a healthy reserve in 2007, and we drew it down over several years in a manner that fortunately matched what we had proposed the board we do. Rather than one abrupt drawdown, we did it over a few years, as well as taking other actions such as not hiring for a while. And we did have a minimum reserve policy back at that time. And the policy until recently was 15% of our general fund budget. Recently, we've upped it to 20%. So you can see we actually drew our reserves down to the minimum there around 2011 and then started increasing them again. Our audited reserves for 2018 were $46 million, very healthy. But as you'll see, we have appropriately, because we had healthy reserves, we've drawn those down a bit for some important things we've taken on. We used $4 million, as I mentioned, for the TIO office. We put about $9 million into a building over in Richmond. And we used about $4 million to acquire some more space in this building on the eighth floor, space that we inhabit on the eighth floor. So you'll see that our projected reserves for right now are about $30 million as I go forward in the presentation. Right now, this is backwards looking. General fund expenditure trend, sort of what you would expect. Little dip there for a few years, and now we start to increase again, especially given the new challenges that we're seeing, that we're trying to take on, and that one-time expenditure for the building that we're in here. Staffing trends. Also, you see, as we discussed, the effects of attrition over time when we're not hiring. We bottomed out in 2013 with 310 positions. We're now staffing up again. In 2018, we had 333 people in seats here. I think we're up closer to about 360 now. I'll say it's my favorite slide. So years ago, we had no money in our reserves, in our OPEB reserve, no money at all. And we had an obligation of almost $50 million, which was pretty close to our general fund budget at the time. So the staff proposed the board authorize that we would start putting money into our OPEB liability. And although it seemed like a long journey, just by doing a little bit every year, we've made quite a bit of progress. The last time we had an official number generated was 2017. You can see we're getting up to close to 75% almost funding there. And of course, with our next next official numbers, 2019, it'll be even better than that. And I'll talk, so this is, as I said, this is the backwards-looking part of this presentation, but I will talk a few slides from now about how we're looking there going forward. But this is a good story and certainly illustrates how just small steps every year can have a significant impact. CalPERS, not as quite a happy a slide. Our funding ratio with CalPERS, as I'm sure everyone is aware, dropped quite a bit from 2007, as it did for everyone else using CalPERS. And we're slowly working to build that back up. This just shows our funding ratio as CalPERS sees it and our rate of return. When I say as CalPERS sees it, that's because, of course, there's some actuarial assumptions there about how much we earn on our money or how much CalPERS earns on our money. And there's a general concern, of course, that that's a little low. So later in the discussion here, when we go future looking, I'll talk about what we're doing to try to make up that ground a little bit. The 2018 rate of return, 8.6%. That just came in recently. So that's historical look. Let me now talk about the proposed 2020 budget. This is a $104 million general fund budget, and we are using $4 million in reserves in this budget. I'll talk about what that is. That's for building out space, where we are increasing our staffing, not increasing our allowed FTE, but just hiring for the already existing allowed FTE. The budget does assume the continuation of the cost recovery policy, which means the changes to the fee rules that you'll hear about in the next presentation. Staffing level, full-time FTE 405 unchanged. And this budget does continue to address our retirement liabilities by paying more than absolutely required into our OPEB and also into CalPERS. And there's a 3.5% cost of living adjustment here. Permit fees are about half of our revenue, property tax about a third. I want to make a point here that relative to AB 617, this budget is assuming $4.8 million is the amount that we will receive. In our most recent interactions with the state on this topic, it has become apparent that we may be receiving more than that. We may be receiving $10 million. But because of some contractual irregularities in the documents they submitted to us and some uncertainties in our conversation, we're not yet counting on that in this budget. We're sticking with the 4.8 for now. General fund expenditures, salaries, pension, OPEB, about two-thirds, service supply and capital, the remaining amount. Our capital budget contains a large number of line items. It's not my intention here to go through all these line items, just to observe that, of course, our ambitions relative to AB 617 and being able to measure what's going on in communities are driving a big portion of this budget. Excuse me. And I want to point out on this slide and the next, of course, that just because these items are in the budget doesn't mean we're authorized to spend those funds. Items over $100,000 have to come back to the board. So when you see these large numbers, it doesn't mean the budget's authorizing us to spend those. We've got here $4 million from reserves. The only reserve pull in this budget is for building out Richmond, and that's $4 million. Again, this is not an authorization to expend those funds, just puts them in the budget, and some money for our permitting systems. You're going to hear today in our next presentation quite a bit on cost recovery and fees, so it's not my intention to dwell on these particular slides, as you'll hear about them in great detail, but certainly our assumptions on fees are part of the budget. Important point just to make here is the current policy guidance from the board is that we would seek to get to at least 85% cost recovery minimum, and you can see we're gradually getting close here. I'll point out, as I have previously, that this cost recovery percentage is with a still very large vacancy rate as we're still staffing up to meet the recent challenges that have been brought to us. And so we do not expect to see this increase in cost recovery. We expect to see a decrease as we staff up. So we do have to continue with the cost recovery policy in order just to stay even close to 85%. And you will hear about, in the next conversation, about how low our cost recovery was. We're authorized to get to 100%, 85% minimum target. And we did update our cost recovery study recently. I've already mentioned this. We expect to see cost recovery dropping as we hire more people. Like to get to our policies now. I think to a large extent this budget does not bring forward unique new programs so much. We're not asking for more people. We're not asking for an increase in our service supply budget. It's actually dropping a little bit. But really, our policies relative to our unfunded liabilities are quite important. So for our general fund budget, our policies recently increased to 20%. Of our general fund budget. Targets for reserves tend to depend to some extent on the size of the agency involved. Very small agencies sometimes need to go substantially above 20% just because their absolute numbers are so low. For agencies our size, reserve policy 15-20% for a minimum is the norm. So since we've got a $100 million budget here, our minimum will be 20. And our projected reserves will be 30 less that 4 for Richmond, so that gives us 26. And here that's illustrated in a little more detail. We've got a few proposed reserve designations. Napa-Sonoma fireplace replacement, designation of $1 million. Pension liability, designation of $1 million. Woodsmoke grants, $1 million and $3 million to be determined. $6 million in designations, $20 million in contingency, so that's $26 million. And of course, as I mentioned, we've actually got 30, but we're proposing with this budget to designate 4 for building out Richmond. And one important topic, you can see in an asterisk at the bottom there, reserves can be changed by the board at any time. So the board's not committing with this budget about how these funds will be spent. I'd like to talk now about our retirement liabilities. That's OPEB, which is our medical, and CalPERS pension. We've been making progress on OPEB. As I discussed, our last official numbers, 2017, were an obligation of $58 million, $40 million in the bank, and that leaves $18 million unfunded. Of course, we have been funding this since that last measurement. With the funding policy in place, 90% target as a minimum, if we continue, as we have now for quite a few years, with a $4 million annual contribution, we think we'll reach this, we're quite confident we'll reach this target by 2022. So we're getting close. Remarkably, we're actually getting close. CalPERS, more difficult story, an obligation of $283 million, 207 funded. So an unfunded amount of $76 million, given some rather optimistic actuarial assumptions. We discussed last year with the board, the committee and the board, the idea of perhaps having a policy to get to 90% funding. And this is a long outlook of 20 years, so of course there's some uncertainty here. But with some reasonable modeling, one could assume or presume that $1 million put aside annually will get us to that 90% target in 2039. So it's a 20-year target to get to 90%, $1 million annually, which we're bringing forward again this year, as we did last. So in summary, we've got a balanced budget. It uses $4 million from reserves. Our budget positions remain at 405. We are assuming the fee schedule that you will hear about next. $1 million extra into CalPERS, $4 million into OPEB, as we have been doing. And I'll be happy to take any questions.
Thank you. At this time, I'd like to see if there are clarifying questions. Otherwise, I'll take public comment before discussion. Okay, is there public comment on this item?
I do have a card from Devin Richards.
Hi, Devin. Come on up. Bye, Devin.
I revoke that.
We'll see you soon. Okay. Yeah, let's take a discussion and questions. Director Abikoga.
Thank you. Going to the, let's see, which slide is this? The CalPERS pension plan, the 20-year target. Does this, at 2022, when we finish paying OPEB, I remember there's discussion about what to do with that $4 million. Would that go into the CalPERS payment?
That would certainly be an option
to
consider. Yes.
But that's not included in this time.
We had explicitly discussed that in the past, but since we're not bringing that forward as an action, we thought we'd put off discussion of that for another year or two until we get closer to actually closing that.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Yeah. Director Hudson.
Yeah, kind of a preemptive strike because this was brought up at our last meeting. The $4 million contribution, I think that goes back to Ash Kalra and I. We wanted OPEB, if you can imagine, it's at 68 now where it was. But I can tell you, as I did at the previous meeting, that my city got to 107% on the OPEB, and psychologically, it's to get OPEB 100% funded. It's what we're looking at by 2022, maybe even before if we get lucky, is absolutely worth it. Even if you were just holding the line at 73% on the PERS to that point. And then, like you went where we went, at that point, we start discussing going 4 million additional. But it went back that far. Also, the funding, 90% funding level, just as a reminder, I think that was Katie Rice's idea. Let's not chop it up today.
Director Chavez, do you have any questions?
Yeah, thank you. I wanted to just make a couple points. One is I love your idea about getting prepared for the downturn. I think that's just smart and really worth taking a look at. And to that end, there were a couple of areas that I wanted to ask staff to think about. I know that BACMED and MTC and all of our other organizations are really unique. But I wondered if there were areas of hiring that we could consider jointly long-term, where we might look, and I'm just using this as an example, but if the TIO is really, really starts to continue to be exceptional and we're looking at areas in transportation or other ways that meet our goals, is that a shared entity that we'd want to share the cost of staff with and other things? And I'm just using that as an example. I don't want to scare the staff. We love you. We don't want to lose you. I'm just looking at where we might have an opportunity not to lose particular programs that during the downturn are going to be easy to cut, but in the long term would be really bad for us to do. That's just a thought. I don't know if staff wants to respond to that.
Jack.
Mr. Chairman, Director Chavez, I think it's an excellent suggestion. We've actually talked amongst ourselves as executive directors of the different agencies along this line about being able to potentially have a share some of our human resources programs such that we could potentially create a list of positions that could go into different agencies and share resources. So I think we've been, that got put on hold a little bit with the hiring of the new executive director. So I'll pick it back up again and talk to Therese McMillan, find out her interest.
Well, the other reason I was thinking about it, just to follow up on that with the TIO in particular, is it may also be a way to get much more investment in it beyond the 4 million and really broaden its scope. But again, I appreciate that. And then the only other thing I wanted to just comment on is that, first of all, I just appreciate the clarity and the detail of this report. I am really interested in understanding at what point whether or not it makes sense for us, and I heard what my colleague said, to be at 100% of OPEB and whether it's 90 or 80% of PERS, because I am really looking for an industry standard. I've not yet understood, and maybe I just need to take a deeper look at CalPERS to understand how much money actually gets drawn down by agency relative to OPEB and even our PERS costs, because in some ways I feel like we may be setting standards that are higher and harder to meet than are necessary. So just a thought.
Thank you. That is an excellent point. And certainly relative to an appropriate target, you can find differing opinions. Some sources will say that you don't want to shoot over 90%, and some sources say 100%. Frankly, the actuarial assumptions are an important part of that question. If, and now I'm just giving my opinion, if the actuarial assumptions are just really unrealistic, then one can feel a motivation to try to get quite close to 100% because one has a sense it's not really 100%. I think we have a better feeling about our OPEB actuarial assumptions than we do about the CalPERS actuarial assumptions. So it is a complicated topic. A very good question, though, because at some point, do you have a trade-off between pre-funding and the costs of pre-funding versus the costs of carrying a little bit of that into the future? Certainly. Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you, Director Wagenknecht.
She just asked the question I was going to ask, so perfect.
Great. Other questions? Okay, so just to close up, I want to thank staff. I want to thank Jeff and Stephanie and Director Groom as the chair, actually, as well. This is probably my favorite part of the Air District. It's so well run. I really appreciate all the hard work you do. This is an excellent budget. I very strongly support this budget proposal. And just to comment on a couple items, to a couple of the questions my colleagues have, I totally support the 90% threat. Oh, you have a button on.
I just wanted to clarify, you prefer this committee to Ledge.
Mixing the pot here. See you on Wednesday. But I do want to say I support the 90% target goals. And I think in our city, that was something that as the budget chair for my community, we've worked on. And we have a 90% funding goal on OPEB. And that has proven to be a really, I think, a good benchmark to work around. And we've been able to take additional steps. And so some of the things, just to be, they're not part of this budget, but just for the benefit of my committee colleagues, that Jeff and Director Groom and I have talked about as future planning. Jeff alluded to a couple of them. I do think that the $4 million that we have as discretionary payments now can be considered and should be considered as going towards pension liabilities in the future. I think we need to take a look in the next 12 months at coming up with a 115 trust, whether that's appropriate or not. I strongly encourage us to look at that to have better control over our pension investments. And I think that the recession is inevitable. We keep guessing when, but the reality is, although it might be more moderate than the last one, that's an opportune time to take some of these reserves or some of these discretionary payments that we have kind of built into the budget and make investments while the market and rates are lower so that we yield a better return, so we have a higher trajectory on the rebound. So all those things are things that we're well positioned to do because of the good work that's been done. So I've always had my questions answered with Jeff offline, and I just really want to appreciate you for all the work you've done on this.
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, if there are no more questions, we're going to move to agenda item number 5, which is proposed amendments to regulation fees, regulation 3 fees. We know we have a speaker card, so let's do the presentation. Seriously.
Mr. Chairman, Pamela Young, our Director of Engineering, is going to give this presentation.
Welcome, Emily.
Thank you. Good morning, Vice Chair Bowders and members of the Budget and Finance Committee. I'm Pamela Leong, the Director of Engineering, and today I'll be presenting the proposed amendments to Regulation 3, our fee regulation. This is the agenda for today. I'll cover cost recovery. I'll present the draft fee amendments. I'll go into a little bit more detail on the proposed amendments to fee schedule N for toxic inventory fees. I'll go over the rule development schedule and talk about some comments already received. So this is the revenue sources for fiscal year end 2018. And as you can see, 50%, quite a large amount, are from permit fees. 36% are from property taxes, with the remainder from various other sources. So the Air District is allowed to recover 100% of the costs of regulating stationary sources. In 2013, the Board of Directors set a goal of targeting a minimum of 85% cost recovery. So cost recovery is the ratio of revenue received from regulatory fees divided by our costs for carrying out these programs. So amendments to specific fee schedules are based on cost recovery analyses conducted at the fee schedule level. And we also implement all feasible cost containment measures. I know you've seen this in the previous presentation, but these are the trends in the Air District expenditures, and they're primarily driven by personnel costs. So these are the trends in cost recovery. In 2011, we were only at 65%, and we've steadily increased fees by about 6.4% per year in order to reach the 85% goal. But however, as you had seen in the previous slide, our costs have been increasing as well, primarily by staffing costs. But we continue to try to meet the minimum 85% cost recovery goal. And last year, the Matrix Consulting Group was hired to update our cost recovery and containment study. Based on their recommendations, this table was created to show the proposed changes into the fee schedules based on the degree of cost recovery for that fee schedule. So recommendations were made to ensure cost recovery levels are maintained and to bridge the gap sooner for schedules with larger deficits. So for example, if we have a 95% cost recovery, we're proposing to only increase fees by the CPIW, which is the consumer price index for Bay Area urban wage earners and clerical workers, which is 3.9% this year. And for schedules with less than 50% cost recovery, we're proposing a 15% increase. So based on the previous table, these are staff recommendations for the proposed fee changes. I'm just gonna go through these quickly, but feel free to interrupt me if you have any questions. So we are going to propose a 3.9% increase for these fee schedules, a 6% increase for gasoline stations and fuel stations, 7% for a miscellaneous source, mid-sized industrial sources, 8% for two fee schedules, including greenhouse gas fees, 9% for three fee schedules, which includes the petroleum tracking or inventory regulation, and 15% to six different fee schedules, including hearing board fees. We're also proposing other amendments to Regulation 3. I'm going to go through these quickly again as well. So we'll add clarifications to the language for solvent sources, or deleting a fee specific to mastic removal and asbestos operations. We're revising the toxic inventory fees to recover the costs of AB 2588 or the toxic hotspot fees paid to ARB, and we need to recover our costs for conducting this work. We also plan to include a fee to recover costs of reviewing asbestos dust mitigation plans. Other changes are increasing permit application fees by the CPIW or 3.9%. We'll revise or clarify that the small business discount and the green business discount, if you're eligible for both, you'll be receiving the higher small business discount. And we'll clarify that risk assessment fees are charged only when we're actually doing an HRA for an alteration. We'll clarify that banking fees also apply to emission reduction credit transactions or trades, not just the banking of those fees or the credits. We propose recovering the costs of all air dispersion modeling, not only health risk assessments. For example, we also do some hydrogen sulfide modeling and modeling for the NACs. And because late fees can have a big impact on our smaller registered sources, we propose decreasing the late fees from 50 to 25%. And this is similar to what we did with all permitted sources last year. So I'll go into a little bit more detail for the proposed changes to schedule and toxic inventory fees. So the proposed amendments are needed to recover an expected increase in state toxic hotspot fees and to recover our costs for this work. We will have to report and pay for additional facilities due to implementation of CAPCOA's air toxic hotspots prioritization guidelines, which were adopted in 2016. We're also proposing to simplify a complicated equation that's used to calculate the fees, and we'll just charge an 80 cents per pound of weighted toxic emissions. And for gas stations, we'll retain a $5 fee for each nozzle. So on the next three slides, I will show you the impact of the proposed fee amendments on our regulated community. So this is for our power plants. The current permit fees range from about $200,000 to $400,000, and with the amendments, we expect to see an increase of about 6 to 7%. And these are the impacts on the petroleum refineries. In 2019, we billed an additional 4 months in order to be able to use the Regulation 1215 refinery tracking rule inventories for permit renewals. So for this extended period, they paid between $2 to $5 million, depending on the refinery. And for fiscal year in 2020, fees are projected to increase from about 2% to 13%. And these are the impacts on our small businesses, which are the gas stations, dry cleaners, and auto body shops and backup generators. So for gas stations, their fees will go up 6%, and the other increases are negligible for the other smaller sources. So we have received some comments at previous budget and finance committee meetings, and we also had a February 19th workshop, and one comment from the Western States Petroleum Association was that they'd like more transparency and specificity in staff timekeeping. And CEEB, California Council for Environmental and Economic Balance, requested to see the fiscal year and 2020 budget earlier in the process and requested an update on cost containment efforts. So I'm going to address the request to improve our timekeeping. So we've created this employee handbook for cost recovery timekeeping that I believe you all have a copy of. So it contains almost 100 billing codes for staff, and it has a description of each bill code so that staff can make sure they're coding their times properly. We're also putting the finishing touches on a cost recovery timekeeping video. It contains, or it explains the importance of cost recovery and why it's important to correctly track and record your time using the correct bill codes. And we could, it'll be done soon, and we could probably premiere that video the next time we meet. We'll use this video and the handbook for staff training. We've created new and expanded time codes to cover all the new work we're doing at the district. And the deputies and directors have quarterly meetings to make sure time codes and bill codes are properly used. So this is the rule development schedule for Regulation 3. We did extensive outreach for the February 19th workshop. We posted the notice and the regulation amendments on the website, and we sent over 13,000 notices to all Air District permitted and registered facilities, asbestos contractors, open burners, and other interested stakeholders. Written comments were due on workshop materials yesterday. We received written comments from WISPA and CEEB. The California Health and Safety Code requires 2 public hearings to adopt or revise fees for non-permitted sources, such as the asbestos operators and owners of the registered equipment. And the first public hearing is scheduled for April 17th. The second, and the comments from the public hearing will be due May 9th. The second public hearing to consider adoption is scheduled for June 5th. And if adopted, the proposed fee amendments go into effect July 1st. That concludes my presentation. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
So I want to apologize because I think I said Emily and you're Pamela, right?
Yes. That's fine.
Hi, Pamela.
Hi.
and so we're going to go from, what's that?
Don't worry about it, Steve.
Don't worry. Yeah, just call me Bill. Devin is still here, and I know Devin wants to speak. Did we add anyone to the queue? We did. Who did we add, Marcy?
So in addition to Mr. Richards, we have Kevin Buchan.
Devin and Kevin. Come on up, guys. Welcome.
Thank you. I was excited to get up here. So 5, not 4. Anyways, good morning, Chair Bowders and members of the committee. My name is Devin Richards, and I'm here on behalf of the California Council for Environmental and Economic Balance, or CEEB. First, CEEB would like to thank staff for providing the proposed budget before the Regulation 3 comment deadline, so thank you for that. And today, what I'd like to do is just highlight 2 issues from our comment letter on proposed amendments to Reg 3, which we submitted yesterday. The first is, in analysis of past budgets, SEEB has found that the total fee revenue has increased 173% since 2010. Yet it is difficult to determine how fee increases support program expenditures and what more is needed to achieve the district's cost recovery goals. For example, Regulation 3 has 24 individual fee schedules, A through X, but the proposed budget lists only 6 general fee categories, and those are annual plant revenue, Title V, asbestos, AB 2588, GHG, and registration fees. SEEB asked that the district explain which of the 24 fee schedules align with the 6 general fee categories listed in the budget. It would also be helpful to understand how revenue generated under the different fee schedules is allocated across the district's divisions and programs. Second, regarding AB 617 implementation, the proposed budget does not clearly define where program expenditures are being allocated and how state funding is being used. For example, at this week's Assembly Natural Resources Committee hearing on AB 617, the district provided a cost of $10 million per year. Yet SEEB could not recreate this number from the details provided in the budget. It is important to say here that SEEB supports the successful implementation of AB 617 and believes the district staff are doing a remarkable job in partnering with communities. To this end, we'd like to work with staff on developing a better understanding of ongoing funding needs. This information helps inform advocacy at the state level for AB 617 and funding for the districts. SEEB appreciates the opportunity to comment today and looks forward to working with the board and staff on budget and fee issues. Thank you.
Thank you for coming. Good morning, Kevin.
Kevin and Devin, I didn't even realize that until you mentioned that, so thank you. Good morning, Vice Chair Bowders and members of the committee. My name is Kevin Buchan with the Western States Petroleum Association. Thanks for letting us testify today. We submitted our comments just yesterday. I brought hard copies for the committee if they have not received them yet. Our letter's pretty short, and we actually took a graphic from SEEB and appended that to the back of our letter. For us, we're unable to reconcile how the board is not achieving 85% cost recovery for managing regulatory activities with the 5 refineries, where in the last 12-month fiscal year, the refineries paid nearly $12 million in fees. It's troubling in light of the fact that the fee increases since 2000 have nearly doubled. This graphic that SEEB has prepared will demonstrate that. In reviewing the fee structure, what became clear to us is there's no transparency between the link of fees and the amount of staff recovery time that is associated with that or resources. They're merely connected with emissions. And we're not able to discern how that does or does not recover costs. And we think it's an issue of a lack of transparency. Couple examples, Schedule X is for community monitors. In the last 3 years, the refineries have contributed or have paid $3 million in fees, and we have yet to see a community monitor installed. For Regulation 331, emission reduction banking, WISPA learned that one of the refineries paid nearly $125,000 to reduce emissions and bank those emissions, and we found it kind of odd that a refinery would have to pay money to reduce emissions. So what we'd like to recommend the committee direct staff to do is you now have a new auditing CPA called Simpson & Simpson. We'd like them to conduct an analysis about how staff code their time on the fee schedules for permitted entities, especially for us, for the refineries, and then issue a report to the public before any fee increases are implemented. Along those lines, we think that the board should suspend any fee increases based on these anomalies that we've identified until this type of audit can be done. And then lastly, we'd like to partner with staff and hold a public work task force to look into this matter more deeply, which would include stakeholder staff and, of course, the regulated community, and then make recommendations to align fees to be more commensurate with staff level of effort. Thank you.
Thank you. Members, if it's all right with you, I'd like to ask staff to respond to a couple items that were raised by public comment. That's generally my preference, and then we can take discussion. Is that okay? Great. So I have a few, just I want to parse back just a few of the comments and ask staff whomever feels it's most appropriate to address. The question from SEEB regarding the 24 fee schedules and the 6 expenditure categories and how those are delineated. Does the revenue that we take in go to a general pot of money? Is that generally our practice, or do we have a process by which some of those expenditures are supposed to be directed into specific revenues are supposed to be directed into expenditure categories?
Yes, Chair Bowders. So there is a mapping of, I think, as one might expect, the categories in the budget are not as detailed as the categories that are actually coded, and those coded categories roll up then into the categories in the budget. That mapping is easy for us to help SEEB look at, so we'd be happy to do that.
Excellent. Next, there's a question about how we identified a need for $10 million for AB 617. It was one of my questions, as well as how we're actuarializing that. So can you just give an overview of how we've come to that, if not in detail necessarily, but just how we've reached that figure?
Chair Bowders, Greg Nutt, our deputy that has the 617 program, can answer that question.
Excellent. Welcome, Greg.
Thank you. Director Bowders, what we did is we looked at our actual expenditures in the last quarter, the most recent quarter, and we assumed that would continue for a full year. And then we added on some additional contract needs that we see for the ability to do more monitoring, to do some screening level monitoring across the Bay Area to make sure that we've identified all key hotspots so that we can further investigate those under AB 617. The other big expenditure that is in that budget that is not seen in that projection, that's mm-hmm. not seen in this budget, is right now the Air Resources Board is modifying their emissions inventory reporting rule. And currently they're asking for things as small as 50 horsepower engines or commercial boilers in schools and things like that. And so if that rule were to continue as currently projected and we can't get them to kind of pull that back down to something more reasonable, it would be a pretty substantial staffing requirement for the Air District. And so the projection we presented at the Assembly Natural Resources Committee included in that a very conservative assumption about the level of effort that would be required to do that.
So it sounds like the number you used was designed to protect the district from having to actually increase fees further by being underfunded by the state.
That is one of our concerns, yes. We have another issue with AB 617 in that most of the activities under that program are not fee recoverable.
Right. Excellent. Thank you for that answer. Then a couple questions that was raised by Kevin. Does anyone want to briefly address the issue? And we kind of talked about it, I think, a little in the last agenda item, but why we haven't met 85% cost recovery. I know that has a lot to do with staffing increases, but maybe you can talk a little more about that.
Certainly. Well, part of the reason is where we started from. I think you saw in a previous slide that at one point we were at 58%, and the nature of increases in our cost recovery is such that it's a percentage increase over the existing percentage. So if you're at 50% and you're limited by law to a 15% increase, you can only make 7% progress every year, so to speak, if you understand. Mm-hmm. I don't think I put that very well, but I think anyway. Then
that's the correct math, though. We have agreed on that. If you've only got a cost recovery of 15% and you 50% and you can only increase 15%, you only have half of the max to work off of. You can only get 7.5% off.
Exactly.
Of it.
Yes. Exactly. So that's one point. In addition, the original guidance from the very first time we put this policy in place from the board. And certainly the intention of the staff was to have this be something that's relatively predictable. And so you can see that over quite a number of years, we've been coming in with more or less the same percentage increase every year, even though by law, you know, we could have increased more. So that measured approach, which I think if we had not had that measured approach, you would have heard about it. that measured approach. Now you're hearing it's making it take a few years. Yes, it is. And I'm sorry, I, that was at least one of the questions.
That was essentially the question is just why we haven't reached. There was a concern that fees are increasing, but we're not reaching that minimum goal of 85%.
Right.
So we're working towards it, but the reality is that the rate that we're moving up, we'd have to actually go at a higher rate to recover it at 85%.
That's true.
Okay. The other two questions that I just wanted to put back out to staff, the community, the monitors, the $3 million that's been asserted that's out there, but there aren't an investment in the monitors. Is that the case? And if so, why? Welcome back, Greg.
I'm not the expert in this particular issue, but Eric Stevenson is out today. My understanding is the situation with the community monitoring that was required in the refinery communities that we're funding with the referenced fee is that fee was set at a level to kind of even out the capital investments over a long period of time. So the capital investments are being made now, and as sites are located within the within the refinery communities, then we'll see those monitors go into place.
Okay, great.
Before you leave, a point of clarification.
You may, absolutely.
We talked about something at the executive committee. Is that part of this, the mapping on top? But that is monitoring, though, correct?
Yes, sir, that is monitoring, and that will give us some more information about what the folks in the refinery communities are actually breathing. But the particular issue that WISPA was raising is about permanent regulatory quality monitors that we're going to be locating in these communities.
And for clarification, that you that weren't there at the exit, we talked about it come before the full board, $5,980,000 for actually mapping out what these readings are at every street in the county.
And, okay. And just to kind of reiterate, point out those regulatory quality monitors with capital and operations cost about $1 million each.
Thank you, Greg. My last question coming out of the public comment is the staff coding of their time for permitted entities. And is that something that we provide detail on? Is there something we can work on that?
Interestingly, there's a lot of detail on that. And we just redid our cost recovery review with Matrix Consulting. And it's my understanding that WISP and SEEB had the opportunity to participate in that. So at that time, there was a detailed dive into that, and if any of that was inadequate, that would have been a great time to talk about it. I think a lot of the information that's being alluded to is actually there and available, and we'd certainly be happy to help WISPA see that.
Thank you for that. Okay, those are the public comment items. So this time, directors, do you have questions that you'd like to ask Director Wagenknecht?
I did have a comment about the employee handbook cost recovery time. It seemed like it was exactly what was being asked for to show that this is exactly how we're doing it. And I like the idea of actually trying to educate with a video also, because I ask if anybody read this and no one has yet, but the video will probably it's like everybody sees the movie but no one reads the book.
Director Hudson.
Yeah, actually, on a serious note, I'm really glad that you brought this up. I think the objective of the year actually is be prepared, because it's coming. We just don't know when or to what scale, but it is coming. And back to, we had two people come up and speak about the increase of the fees, and
you can call them Devin and Kevin.
Yeah, no, I won't. And I went through the handout, and I had to stop. I had to bug Brad because you guys weren't here. Schedule N, toxic inventory fees. We're collecting money. We're charging fees to pay CARB.
Yes, Director Hudson. Yeah. I know that's. Believe me, we're not the biggest fan of that program either, but that is something that we do, and there's actually other fees we have to collect for CARB as well.
Okay.
That's a requirement in the statute.
It's a requirement.
I know. It's not the first one. I found out the hard way sitting in that seat, and you just want to throw stuff. But it needs to go public that we don't just make all of these things up. This one, anyway, getting off of that, I've always had a concern. I do it every year, do the same thing. It's the percentage that we're jumping for some people. The 3.9, as I read it, is something that, unfortunately, Canepa and I have to take a lot of risk. We're the ones that brought it up. Hey, why don't we just do the CPI each year, and then it will reduce the fees on everybody else. Well, it didn't make that much of an effect. I'm really concerned, as you are apparently, of when we go forward, because when you increase the fees, if people go out of business or you're not collecting the money, and it just snowballs. And I heard something yesterday that has me concerned, because it's these little things that you don't bring them up and you find out they add up. Talking to Walnut Creek, 5 restaurants went out of business. Now, I don't know how many fees or whatever we hit restaurants on, but their answer to solve this problem was to count tips as part of the minimum wage, and they were looking for legislation to do it. That's going nowhere. But the reality is, when you start doing this, how many other fees do we have to increase? And at 9%, that was really the gist of what went up there. You're doubling your fees 8 years, and that can't continue. So somehow, some way, I believe the 85% is right. I just don't know how to get there. But we have to be cognizant of that this is a considerable push on some of the smaller businesses.
Thank you, Director Ross.
Thank you, Steve.
Oh, you're welcome, Bill.
Anytime. I'm terrible with names, too. It's my biggest problem. So I'm very, I'm impressed with this. I was just wondering, it doesn't really have any protocols as to how it, guidelines for how it's allocated, such as is travel time included to a facility? Is that charged to that category, or is that just on us?
Director Ross, that would be the time coding for the individual involved. And so if that individual's job is, if they're on the clock and they're being compensated by the Air District and they're doing work relative to that facility, then that would be a charge.
And that includes travel times.
Yeah.
Okay, good. And one other thing that caught my eye, on the $5 per nozzle, I mean, I know that's added on to the other fees, so it's not a separate invoice, but that almost begs, is it worth the time to verify that it's $5 a nozzle, that they have X number of nozzles versus $5? The time it might take you to do that might be more than $5 than the cost of the nozzles you're charging. So I would either...
So the number of nozzles is coded into our database, so it's pretty much an automatic function. We'll charge the $5 per nozzle that's in our data bank.
It's been counted already. It's in the numbers. And the number is verified in the field with the annual visit by our inspector.
Okay, so just thought I'd ask. Thank you.
Director Chavez, friend, hello. You have any questions?
Hi there.
Hi.
No, I'm good. Thank you for asking.
You're welcome. Director Abikoga, you have any questions? I'm okay. You're good? Anyone else over here? I just want to thank your responsiveness to the public comments. I want to just echo some of the comments Director Hudson made. This is a difficult threshold to reach. I mean, we're talking about a floor of 85%, right? Not a maximum. So, I mean, in an ideal world, and nobody wants to hear this, ideally we recover 100%, right? That's how the system should work in an ideal world. But that will really put a very significant burden on some of our smaller business entities. And so I think that comes back into the question that was asked by the public about how are we not making it, and the balance that we have between staffing and the use of staff time and the other sources of revenue we have is something that we have to keep an ongoing eye on. So if there are no other questions, Pamela, thank you for your presentation and for being responsive to our questions. That will conclude agenda item number 5. There's no action on that, is there? Do we have to make a recommendation? No, okay. So at this time, there's public comment for the non-agenda items. We have none? Okay, seeing none, committee member comments. Are there comments from members up here? Okay.
Very efficient meeting.
Mr. Ross.
I want to charge for my 2 hours of travel time.
Thank you. The time and place of our next meeting will be Monday, April 29th, 2019, at the Bay Area Air Quality Management District Office, located here in this room at 10:30 a.m. Madam Clerk, the time is 10:31. We're adjourned.
Thank you. Thanks.